The following message is by Pastor John Piper. More information from Desiring God is available at www.desiringgod.org.
A word of explanation about the Advent poems. For 24 years now, we have celebrated Advent at Bethlehem by the lighting of the candles, one candle for each Advent Sunday and then one on Christmas Eve. And to go with the lighting of each candle, I have written an Advent poem. The poems are fiction. My prayer is that they will, like everything else we aim at Bethlehem, awaken a passion for God's supremacy and promote biblical truth and not contradict anything in the Bible. You might say that I preach two sermons each worship service during Advent. Only one of them rhymes. This year, one person in the congregation will understand where these come from because this person gave me this idea, and I thank him for it and will do my best to go the direction he pointed. The setting is Lystra in Turkey, today's Turkey, the second visit of the Apostle Paul, and it's the visit in which he asked Timothy to join him in the ministry, and as you may recall, Timothy's mother's name is Eunice. And the name of this poem is Paul's Face, Part 1. The lantern cast a shadow dim across Paul's face and covered him as if just half a man with light on his left side. He kept the right side of his face turned to the dark so Eunice and her son could mark when he would smile. The last time he was here, he noticed Timothy, especially the trembling and the awkward twitching in his hand. Paul felt a kinship with the youth and asked his mother if the truth of Christ had taken root or made a difference in the way he prayed or talked about his dreams. She said, "He wants to talk with you. The dread he felt is almost gone. He told me when you left last time, he's bold in spite of how he looks. Do you think Paul would meet when he comes through this way again?" "I think he would," I said. "If you and Silas could come by our house tonight, he's got some painful questions that I've not been able to resolve. Perhaps your story might fill in the gaps between my son and God." Paul sat with Silas on the right, and at his left, the young man, Timothy, with Eunice sitting quietly across the table. "Paul, what I would like to understand is why you're not self-conscious when you preach in synagogues or when you teach in schools or when the crowds surround you in the square. I feel all bound up in myself whenever I have tried to speak. I'd rather die than watch embarrassed faces glance at my bizarre and spastic stance and twitching hands and then look down in pity, or worse, mock the clown and laugh at my attempts to speak of Christ. Paul, how, week after week, can you make your misshapen face the object of so much disgrace and not become embittered at man's cruelty? Or worse than that, the cruelty of God. Has your face always been that way? Before you can remember? Or was it an injury? I'd gladly sit here all night long if you could tell us, Paul, your story." The pleasant smell of burning lantern oil filled up the empty moments as a cup is filled with wine to make one strong and bold to carry out some long and painful task. Paul turned his face a fraction toward the boy. By grace, his mother never blinked or took her eyes from Paul's. Her steady look was trained to see through skin and rest on deeper things and there be blessed and bless. Paul felt this solid grace and said, "Yes, Timothy, this place, this night is ripe for hearing tales of how God beats with beams and nails the rhythm of His gracious plan and makes a cruel and ugly man His healing branch." It all began in Tarsus, where my father's clan has lived 200 years dispersed since mighty Maccabees had burst against the idols of the land. My father was a Roman and a Jew, the master of a school that silenced scathing ridicule and rivaled all the Greeks for pride in higher thought. My father tried in every way to make the Jews outshine the pagans who amused themselves with myths and learned for naught philosophy and empty thought. He dreamed of having sons who took the pedestal and without book or note outshone Demosthenes and brought all Troas to its knees in praise of Jewish rhetoric. My birth turned out to be a trick, it seems. And all the deities of Troas scoffed. The willow trees beside the river Cindus speak more fluently than Jews with weak and palsied faces. I was born, I've often thought, as with a thorn so deep that none could pull it from its place. My cheek and eye are numb. The right side of my lips drops out as though I had a constant pout. My right eye never shuts and drains incessantly. There are no pains, nor can I feel the drainage so to wipe my face before I know it's time from how the people stare. Infections in that eye are there as often as they're not, and I can barely use it now. The cry that went up from my father's heart was not from pity from my part, but rage against the gods or God, that they or he would rise and trod my father's dream down into dust. He wrote me once and said, "I trust you know I named you Saul, but not because he was a king. His lot was to be king, but he was born a fool. He couldn't blow the horn, never led his troops to war, and ended up a heap before his enemies impaled upon his own dull sword." The dawn of my third birthday, I was sent up to Jerusalem and spent my youth beneath the watchful eye of one my father knew, Rabbi Gamaliel. My mother wept and tried to help me to accept it as a kind of mission for the Lord, like Samuel, who bore the burden of the word when he was only 3 and went to be with Eli in the temple of the Lord in Shiloh. But her love could not conceal my father's aim and plan. Protect the family name and pride, eliminate the shame, advance the cause of his acclaim, and guard the status of his school. Even at 3, I was no fool to think my going was a gift to me. Gamaliel was tough, just like the Torah in his rough and flawless hands. He looked at me one time and said, "Saul, you can be the best rabbinic mind with ease, a Pharisee of Pharisees, the law and prophets written on your mind. God gave you mental brawn to make up for your outward looks. If you will give yourself to books and parchments and the legacy of all the oral wisdom we possess, you will advance above all the contemporaries of your age and stop the mouths of strange and foolish men who dare to change the law and even claim the King of Israel has come. The sting such messianic fools will feel from your intimidating zeal will crush their cause, and you will see why God brought you to live with me." Gamaliel could not conceive that all I wanted to receive was not the talent to transcend my age, but just to have a friend. Why would a boy choose to contend or fight if he could have a friend? But then Gamaliel was right. There were no friends. And so both night and day, I lived with books. These were my silent friends. No scorn, no slur. They all accepted me. They spoke to me, but never made a joke about my face. And so I built a wall around my world. All guilt and shame remained outside. Inside, I had my friends, my law, my pride, my flags of joy above the world, an echo of my rage unfurled. Paul stopped. The hand of Timothy before him motionless lay free upon the table. Eunice sat enthralled with Paul, but noticed that the tremors of her son were still. Paul, you're not done, are you? Let's fill our cups before we do the rest, Paul said. I'll get to your request. There's more. My citadel would soon be breached and sacred rubble strewn in broken pieces everywhere. Let's pause, and then I'll take you there. May God in mercy make this flame a crucible for testing blame, this candle won. Lord, let it burn our blaming soul until we learn how much of it is sin. Burn down the wall around our little town that we have built to keep outside the pain, but found it shelters pride. Oh, let this light expose the stain and guilt of how we make our pain a warrant for our sin, and then build walls around our guilt, and when they're up, unfurl the flag of rage. Come, candle one, consume this cage and set us free. We do not need these walls. The Lord of glory freed us for himself, and our disgrace he took, and he will lift our face.
Thank you for listening to this message by John Piper, pastor for preaching at Bethlehem Baptist Church in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Feel free to make copies of this message to give to others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. We invite you to visit Desiring God online at www.desiringgod.org. There you'll find hundreds of sermons, articles, radio broadcasts, and much more, all available to you at no charge. Our online store carries all of Pastor John's books, audio, and video resources. You can also stay up to date on what's new at Desiring God. Again, our website is www.desiringgod.org. Or call us toll-free at 1-888-346-4700. Our mailing address is Desiring God, 2601 East Franklin Avenue, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55406. Desiring God exists to help you make God your treasure, because God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in Him.